Welcome back. I'm Mark Fisher of the Washington Post, sitting in for Kodjo Namdi. There are those who always seem to know what bottle of wine to buy, the people who know which vintages are the best and which flavors pair perfectly with what you're planning to eat. And then there are the rest of us who use the less scientific method of making such a choice. We might actually pick based on the label we like best. It turns out that even educated wine drinkers fall victim to choosing bottles because they like the cuddly animals or pretty colors on the label. Marketers spend enormous amounts of energy designing labels to trigger our impulses. And one can learn a lot about basic consumer behavior by studying the buying patterns of wine consumers. Joining us to explore the art and science behind the labels and what we might learn about wine by looking past its packaging are Sebastian Zutant, the co-owner and sommelier of the Red Hen in the Bloomingdale section of Washington, D.C., and David Schumann is the author of 99 Bottles of Wine, The Making of the Contemporary Wine Label. He's also the owner and creative director of CF Napa Brand Design, and he joins us by phone from Napa, California. And Sebastian Zutant, at your restaurant, The Red Hen, obviously people are not choosing their wines by the label, but when you're out as a consumer, do you find yourself being swayed by what's on the label?
I'm not going to lie. You know, I own a gold iPhone 5S for a reason. It was the first thing I was drawn to. So we're all drawn to shiny metallic things and so on and so forth. But I'm also fortunate enough in the fact that I haven't had to shop in a retail store for a long time. But I won't lie. I mean, everybody's drawn to kind of pretty looking things, you know, certain color patterns, so on and so forth. But I do make an effort to shy away from things like things called like Bow Wow or, you know, some sort of bad word or, you know, things like ushered towards like female consumers with skinny legs and things of that nature. I tend to find they're lower in quality.
Okay. Well, we'll get into that, whether there really is a correlation between what's on the label and what's in the bottle. But you can join our conversation by calling 1-800-433-8850 or email us at kodjo@wamu.org. You can send us a tweet at Kodjo Show. Let us know if you've bought a bottle of wine based purely on your reaction to the label. Were you satisfied in the end? Did you see a connection between the label and the contents? Do you drink with your eyes? Let us know at 1-800-433-8850. And David Schumann, you have obviously put a lot of study into this question. Is there a connection between what's on the label and what's inside? Is it either in the kind of wine you're going to be having or the quality of the wine?
Well, certainly. I mean, one of the reasons we wrote the book was actually to kind of describe a little bit of that thinking process. And one of the themes that we talk a lot about is really leveraging storytelling into the brand so that we start to describe the wines and how they're going to taste and maybe something about the background of the owner or the property itself right onto the label. So really visually we start to tell that story.
And so when you are making this decision yourself as a consumer in the spur of the moment, I'm not quite sure what to get, but this bottle with the gold stamp on it looks kind of enticing. Do you feel guilty making that decision based on the label? Does it feel like you're somehow doing something that you know, where you should have known better, or does it seem like all of a piece with judging what's inside the bottle?
Well, we're certainly not trying to deceive any consumer into buying any of our clients' products. It wouldn't do them any, it wouldn't do our clients much service. They probably wouldn't get repurchased. I mean, generally speaking, what we're trying to do is if they've got some awards they've won, you know, we may highlight those on the front. Certainly, we all fall prey to that at any kind of wine consumer level. Even the more sophisticated wine consumers are swayed by scores from wine enthusiast or wine spectator, things like that. But certainly at the lower end of the, you know, more everyday wine drinking kind of quality, you know, people need a lot of reassurance of what maybe they're wondering what a wine may taste like. And so there's color cues and things like that that we can kind of help them assist, whether it's going to be a more fruit-forward wine or maybe it's something a little bit more serious to be paired with food.
Well, let's go to that color question, because clearly there's something to do with color in the choices of what goes on the label, but what is the connection between that color choice on the label and the kind of wine you're going to be drinking? Is there a very clear correlation there?
Sometimes there's something as simple as berry-flavored kind of colors like reds and purples and blues for red wines, and more kind of lighter fruit like green or kind of melon colors for like a Sauvignon Blanc that may have some of those kinds of flavors involved with them versus a Chardonnay that might have a more buttery color like a yellow. And then on the opposite side of the spectrum, there's certainly a trend to create labels that are just simply disruptive on shelf. So doing, you know, creating labels that are Tiffany blue, which certainly aren't indicative of any kind of flavor of the wine, but they stand out on shelf. And let's face it, I can't think of another consumer category that you're going to walk into the aisle and see 2,000 to 3,000 choices. Wine's a pretty unique and very crowded marketplace, and people are fighting hard for consumer attention.
And Sebastian Zutant, color is something you've thought about a lot. I know on the menu at the Red Hen, you have not just red wines and white wines and rosés, but a category that I have not seen on other wine lists of orange wines. So you've thought about what color means to someone when they're choosing a wine.
Yeah, the whole orange wine thing has kind of been around for a really long time. As a matter, it's really just a reflection or sort of like a hearkening back to the way that white wines were made 1,000 years ago. I guess it just wasn't really identified as orange wine for a long period of time. And it's only kind of, I just saw it in New York a couple of years ago, and I was like, so that's what that's called.
And what does it actually signify?
It's really the opposite process of baking a rosé. So rosé, you basically press a red grape, right? And then you leave the skins in contact just for a little period of time to give color, texture, so on and so forth. So it's the same process just with white wine. So essentially, you'd press a Pinot Grigio grape. You'd take the juice, but you'd leave the skins in contact with it for an extended period of time because white wines, you want to kind of give a whole different level of flavor. So it starts to take on skin tannin, starts to take on color, and really just gives it that orange hue. It's got nothing to do with a flavor orange or any of that.
But back to the labels, when you're serving wines or choosing wines with customers, mm-hmm. Does the label play any role in a restaurant for wine, or is it purely a retail kind of thing?
For me, I've got to be honest, I really do shy away from things that are on the flashy side of things. It's just, I don't know. It's a personal thing, you know. I've just never been one to kind of carry really kind of like blazing labels that were, you know, over the top. Again, I kind of tend to think that they don't really imply a lot of what they're carrying.
Let's hear from Michael in Bethesda, Maryland. Michael, you're on the air.
Thank you very much for taking my call. This is a subject that is very near and dear to my heart. I work at a winery called Leagues of Grass Vineyards in Middleburg, and we worked on our wine labels for 2 years. This was a labor of love. We worked with the designers in Austria, and I was always puzzled by most vineyards that just use their same logo on every bottle, bum, 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 and change the name of the wine, right? So Cab Franc, Cab Sauv, et cetera, et cetera. But they'll just use their own corporate label, and you would never know how beautiful their winery is or their production facility. And so we wanted each one to be this magnificent art piece. So there's wine for love, wine for adventure, wine for thought, so on and so forth. And I just wanted to bring up the point that basically we started in 2008 and we completely bankrupted ourselves because the labels cost so much to produce.
Because you're paying the artists and the consultants and the other the designers and so on?
Correct. That oftentimes, if you're really passionate about the labels, it can be take away from the cost of the production of wine, and you know, you can have really nice labels, and that's about it.
Let's give David Schumann a chance to jump in here. David, is that a typical story? Is that kind of devotion to the label, is that the right proportion, or what do you generally recommend to winemakers?
Well, certainly it depends on the size and the scale of your operation. We have clients that make just a few hundred cases, and certainly we have some of the largest clients in the world that make, you know, millions of cases of wines. And those two kind of challenges are completely different, and we try to scale our fees accordingly. But one of the things we do talk to clients about is to really consider the investment they're going to make in their package design as kind of an 80-20 rule. If when they first are launching a wine brand, consumers will tend to buy the wines predominantly about 80% because of the packaging and 20% because of the wines inside, unless they've gotten a high score or they've read about it somewhere else, and those are tough things to get. And hopefully once they've tried it, the 80-20 rule flips and they buy it 80% because they love the wine and 20% because of the packaging. But certainly, in a lot of ways, we really do drink with our eyes and we judge books by their cover. And when you're making a quick decision in shopping, you know, they don't have a lot of other options to try to learn about the wines themselves other than perhaps someone in the store or sommelier in a restaurant. But what we've seen from most of our clients, and we've got quite a few case studies in the book itself, is really that our production is and sales have vastly increased after we've done some of the work we've done. And I know we take a different approach than a lot of other agencies, but it's not uncommon to see sales double or even quadruple.
So the investment that Michael was talking about can actually pay off.
Absolutely.
And Sebastian Zittan, obviously in a restaurant, it's a very different kind of approach. So if you take that 80-20 rule that that David Schumann was talking about, it's got to be at least reversed in a restaurant because the customer never sees the label.
That's true. And I can understand probably why that guy was putting so much money into his label, because if he's shooting for, you know, to basically be on shelves, then yeah, you got to be, you know, appealing to people that are walking past it.
That's your billboard.
Yeah, it's your billboard, you know. And the restaurant model is very, very different. Now, that being said, when you get into high-end wineries, they're not slapping junk on the front of their bottle. You know, they're really, really pretty. They're really well put together. And it's not just, you know, super high-end wineries. It's middle of the road. It's, you know, higher middle of the road. I think there's ways to go about it, but the retail model versus the restaurant model is 100% different.
Absolutely. I mean, it's one of the first questions we actually ask our wineries is what their main channels of sales are. Because as you mentioned, if you're going to be sold in a restaurant, really what you're trying to do is look commiserate with the quality that the sommelier is talking about with the wine and maybe express a certain small story about the winery. But what it really comes down to is looking commiserate with the price they're going to be charging.
Mm-hmm. And so, David, what are some of the tricks that are used in the trade to get across that level, that question of just how expensive or high quality a bottle of wine is? Is that message contained in what's on the label?
Well, sometimes it's a simple elegance and just the way the elements are treated, hand-drawn typography. It could be print techniques like gold foil stamping that kind of gives it a gilded look. Certainly, there's a kind of a three-dimensional now quality to a lot of labels. The printing techniques now allow us to emboss textures and deboss type so that it looks like it's stamped into the label, kind of a limited edition feel. And that tactileness has certainly, over the last 5 years, played a huge role in kind of the quality perception of certain wines.
You know, if I can jump in real quick, there was actually, I remember when I was younger, when I was like, I don't know, 22 or something, and I was into wine. I was always into wine, even when I was young and everybody was, you know, down in 40s. But like, I remember distinctly Ecco Domani kind of came on the scene. Uh-huh. And I was like, wow, I think those guys get it. It was like, it was like Italian stuff. They were putting out like Sangioveses and so on and so forth. But they were smart labels. You know, they weren't overly aggressive. They just seemed well put together. And so I always felt like I was buying something nicer.
And so, all right, so Sebastian Zittan is a co-owner of the Red Hen restaurant in Washington in the Bloomingdale section. When you have customers coming in, they know it's a restaurant that has a specialty in wine. What is it that you're trying to teach them that allows them to take some skills from the restaurant experience and apply it to what they then go out and buy on their own? Is there something that they can gain from working with you on your wine list and picking something?
Well, you've been there a couple of times, so you've seen the wine list. It's pretty eclectic. I'd say that throughout my career, I've been kind of lucky enough to sculpt my own this like weird little section of unique wine focus. So I've always also been on the affordable side of things. So I want people to be able to come in and drink a nice bottle of wine for $40. It's really important to me. And I would say that the thing that I think people take away is the ability to go into a wine shop and literally ask for what it is that they're looking for. I think that's a lot of the problems that people have in general is that people just kind of go in and don't really know what to ask for. And so it's really important to me to like help guide people to like have those few things in their pocket, you know, just to say exactly how much you want to spend, exactly what profile you're looking for. And, you know, if you want to try something completely new or if you want to stay in your wheelhouse, Most of my stuff's not in anybody's wheelhouse, though.
Okay. Let's hear from Caleb in Washington. Caleb, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, everybody. I just want to say thanks for taking my call. By the way, I live about two blocks down from the Red Hen, and I love eating there. Great great menu, great wine. So thank you for bringing that to the neighborhood.
Thanks, man.
My question is actually, it's just kind of more of a curiosity. I was wondering if you guys could tell me, if you kind of see a list of, I guess for better lack of a better term, usual suspects or common culprits based on either, you know, kind of region or varietal where you see this kind of like, you know, glam packaging, you know, kind of flash versus quality that you see, just out of curiosity.
David Schumann?
I don't know that there, I mean, certainly there are some regions that are known for more kind of fun packaging. I mean, Lodi, California comes to mind with a lot of the Zinfandels they've produced and brands like Seven Deadly Zins and names like that that tend to be, but I wouldn't say that those aren't quality wines either. They, I think that generally speaking, the wines are trying to deliver at various price points that are appropriate for certain consumers. Let's face it, not everyone's going to drink a $100 plus Cabernet from Napa Valley every night. And where we see more of the flashy kind of fun labels, I would say, or at least would be you know, under $15, generally speaking. And above that, certainly things get much more serious. And to be very clear, we design labels across the spectrum. We've certainly designed labels for wines that are $350 plus, and we've done quite a bit of work in the kind of under $10 everyday wine category. And it really comes down to, again, being appropriate to that category.
David Schumann is the author of 99 Bottles of Wine, The Making of the Contemporary Wine Label, and Sebastian Zutant is co-owner of the Red Hen Restaurant in Washington. And when we continue our conversation after a short break, we'll get into the correlation between price and labels and the quality of wine and take more of your calls at 1-800-433-8850. I'm Mark Fisher. Stay with us. Coming up at 1, Czech writer Ivan Klima lost his freedom under the Nazis and the communists, but emerged as one of his country's most important voices. He joins us to discuss his memoir, My Crazy Century, today at 1 on the Kojo Namdi Show on WAMU 88.5 and streaming at kojoshow.org.
Good afternoon, I'm Jessica Jordan. Stay with us. Coming up after the Kojo Namdi Show, it's Tell Me More that starts at 2 o'clock. We'll hear about a new study that shows more people are dating across ethnic lines and Asian women are the most preferred. We'll have that story on Tell Me More starting at 2.
What happens to the newspapers, Christmas tree lights, cell phones, and even the cars we discard for recycling? Why are so much of the stuff we get rid of shipped overseas? On the next Fresh Air, we talk with journalist Adam Minter, whose parents owned a junkyard, about the global billion-dollar trash trade. Minter is the author of Junkyard Planet. Join us.
Fresh Air starts this afternoon at 3 o'clock.
Support for WAMU 88.5 comes from Father Martin's Ashley, private alcoholism and drug addiction care on the Bay, offering a pain recovery treatment program for those with chronic pain and drug dependence. 800-799-HOPE or ashleytreatment.org.
It's 41 degrees now in northwest D.C., mostly sunny skies for the rest of the day with highs in the lower 40s. Tonight, clear, cold with lows around 30 in the downtown areas.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Fisher of The Washington Post, sitting in for Kojo Namdi, and we are talking about wines and wine labeling and the ways in which consumers are asked to make choices about wines with David Schumann, the author of 99 Bottles of Wine, and Sebastian Zutant, the owner and sommelier of The Red Hen in Washington. And we were talking before the break about wine labeling, and the issue of pricing came up. And David, is there some message about price point that is communicated by a label, or are they completely different factors?
Definitely related. I mean, one of the major challenges we see from a lot of our clients is that they've got a package out in the marketplace that isn't performing correctly for the quality of wine and the price point that they're selling the wine at. And so when it doesn't feel like like it's worth the wine that's inside, people might pass it over. And conversely, certainly you don't want to overpackage a wine and overpromise quality and then disappoint the consumer when they purchase it. One of the kind of interesting things that's going on right now is because there's so much discounting going on, and this is more related to retail sales, so out in a grocery store or a wine shop, is that a lot of the labels we're touching these days were actually designed to look a little bit more expensive than their actual price point, so it's kind of got a built-in value.
And what does that look like when you say something is designed to look more expensive? What would I be looking for to give me that clue?
Well, certainly it's not going to be as flashy or as colorful in most cases. It's going to be a little bit more traditional in style. It's going to have some of those gold foil and embossing techniques more than likely. And it's probably going to have a clean, organized, simple look, generally speaking.
Okay. And Sebastian, what is the connection, it's your understanding of the psychology of price versus quality? Do people expect that if they pay more, it's automatically a better quality? And does that, in fact, live out to be the truth?
Who knows? It's yet to be stated. It's like you could make the same argument for art. Some guy named Tom Smith may be making an amazing painting that sells for $50, and then Jackson Pollock sells for $50 million, and it's like, all right, you know. Who really knows? There's been many case studies where people were tasting 100-point wines next to 0-point wines, and 0-point wines won out. So one could argue both sides of the coin. However, that being said, I think there is an assumption, and I won't necessarily say that it's a wrong one, that when you start paying certain dollars, you're expecting, at the very least, that the wine is being treated well, it's being well, you know, manicured, so on and so forth. For me, I really look forward, or not look forward, but I look towards kind of like more organic biodynamic winemaking, which actually costs more. For me, I just at least know that there's a healthier approach to making the wine. So I know that I feel good about that. But in terms of, there's a lot of gray area. You know, I don't really see a lot of difference between the $20 bottle and the $30 bottle. And I think a lot of people will tell you that.
And when folks in the restaurant ask you for advice, how much is price a factor in what you offer? Do you ask the customer, what do you want to pay?
100%. I think that is. I've had a half bottle of $300 wine dropped on me before by a person who I considered a friend, and at that moment I was like, I will never go through that situation again. So my questions when I talk to a table is, you know, what kind of style are you looking for? And by style I mean, do you want something like fruit forward, or do you want something dry and earthy, full bodied or light bodied, and literally what do you want to spend? And you know, it may be a little bit jarring at first, and if it's like a date situation, I kind of try to whisper in the ear, but for the most part I think it's really important that people understand that I'm not there to take money out of their pockets. So,
great. Let's hear from Noel in Annapolis. Noel, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for the show. It's something very interesting to me. I was giving you a call because I'm actually an importer in the D.C., Virginia area, and I'm dealing with some of those kind of eclectic wines that you're talking about. I import wines from the country of Georgia, which most people don't even know is not a state. And dealing with those interesting orange wines, natural biodynamic.
They're actually Georgian wines on the Red Hen Whip.
I pour pheasant's tears by the glass.
Yeah. Hokumi Sremeli is a great guy, John Werderman. So I'm glad that you're doing that. Thanks for that support. And what I wanted to ask is sort of get you guys' feedback about, there's a lot of emerging regions as Eastern Europe is now recently by the Sommelier Association in New York been called the most emerging region. And especially with Georgian, you know, it's a very unique language, doesn't look anything like anything in that region. And a lot of things that I go with over my producers is trying to think about, you know, foreign language on a bottle. You know, is it appealing? Does it detract from it? Is it better to sort of, if you're trying to get into that mid-market? And then just a second question along that same line is, you're talking about price to quality. I have this problem all the time, is that my price to quality ratio, because of the foreign thing, most people think, oh, it's probably not that good because they've never heard of it. But then it tends to be, you know, higher quality than the price. And so it sort of either backfires, you know, people don't buy because they think it's too cheap and too weird, or they think it's really underselling it and that you could make more money. So those are my two questions. So I'd be interested to think what you guys think.
Sebastian?
Excellent questions. Foreign words on labels, no problem. They've been doing it since the dawn of time. Look at Greek wines, look at French wines. They're all in other languages. So don't sweat that. You're in a good place. It's a really interesting question you ask about price point, because I could tell you that I wholeheartedly think that, for example, the pheasant steers from Georgia is actually underpriced. But I also think that I would have a hard time pouring it by the glass and putting it in people's in front of people without it being at that price point.
It's underpriced because it's so good that it should cost more?
It's unbelievably good. I mean, if Parker were scoring it, it would be a 92-point wine. It's big, it's juicy, it's jammy, it's got a lot of luxury in the bottle. The packaging is gorgeous.
And by underpricing it, you think there are just a lot of people who dismiss it and say it's not worth my time?
No, I think they're keeping the pricing low so that they can get into the market, and eventually the price will rise. But you see it with a lot of stuff. You know, Movia out of Slovenia is also, you know, you're paying $20 a bottle, but the wine is you know, drinking like $80 a bottle. So it's interesting.
Here's an email from Daniel. He says, when wine store managers greet me immediately upon entry with "what can I help you find," they just don't get it at all. I don't know much, if anything, about wine, he says, but when I come to a wine store with a lot of selection, I want to look around for 5 or 10 minutes on my own to see what appeals to me. Believe me, I know that when I have a question, the store manager will trip over his own feet to serve me. David Schumann, that kind of experience that people like Daniel want, where they walk into a store and they just want to look around even though they admit they really don't know what they're looking for, that, I guess, is where your labels come into play. What is it on a label that's going to jump out at somebody like Daniel?
Well, I think in general, most people shop wine stores by kind of either region or kind of wine they may like. So they start with something they might be familiar with, like a Chardonnay, and then they'll kind of peruse around and look for things on the shelves. Might be a shelf talker, or it might be a label that jumps on them. Maybe that's something that they're interested in. It could be as simple as something like a horse on a label, and they like horses. Or it could be more sophisticated, like they really like Pinot Noir, and they may be attracted to something that looks a little bit more Burgundian in style, so more French-style label design, even if it's not from France. It's certainly something we've seen a lot. It's amazing. We've even done some consumer research where consumers actually perceive the same wine differently from the two different package designs. So we'd pour the same wine in two different package designs, and one may look a little more expensive and one may look a little more friendly, and they perceive the taste of the wine completely different out of those two bottles. It's pretty amazing.
Wow. So when you go about designing a label, are you looking for those kinds of behaviors that you know exist out there, or are you actually more interested?
Absolutely. There are certain consumers that are looking for different either quality cues or signals to them that it's going to be the kind of wine that they're looking for, and different demographics look for different sorts of those cues, and we try to incorporate those on the label so they attract them on shelf, but just as importantly, they can recall the wine they had, you know, at a restaurant or maybe last week at a friend's house. And that's one of the more difficult things I think even myself I fall prey to is remembering the wine I tried that I wasn't familiar with before.
Give me an example of those different demographics you mentioned and what appeals to them. Give a couple of examples of designs that work for one group or another.
Sure. Well, there's certainly millennials are a group that gets talked about a lot, and I think maybe over homogenized at times. But certainly, they like to discover new wines. They like to discover new regions. They're much more adventuresome than say a baby boomer kind of aged wine consumer. They're going to be they'll be more open to kind of a little bit more fun labels. They don't need quite as much reinforcement. It doesn't need to look near as classic. Whereas someone who's a more sophisticated wine consumer, older demographic, and let's say more of an East Coast purchaser tends to be much more classic in their design aesthetic. They like European wine labels more, that kind of more French look to it.
And what's the demographic that you're trying to appeal to with all of these wine labels or brand names that are really bad puns or naughty words? Those seem to be two growth areas. Who are they going after with those?
Yeah, I think that's kind of a broad audience. I think it probably spans from kind of a, you know, legal drinking age up to, you know, even baby boomers. It's an everyday kind of wine. It's the don't overthink it. I'm going to be good and delicious and kind of fun, and you can take me to the backyard barbecue.
Sebastian, David brought up an interesting question about an area of great frustration for many wine buyers, which is how do you remember the wine you loved? Somebody came to the Red Hen and they had a great wine, and 3 weeks later they're in a store and they just have no memory of it. Is there a trick that you use to remember wines?
Yeah, it's magical. It's called a smartphone. take these crazy things called pictures on your camera. we're lucky in the fact that everybody carries a camera with them all the time now. And honestly, that's the best way to go about it. Writing it down on your hand isn't going to help or anything. And no one's got that good of a memory, especially when they've had three bottles of wine.
Right. So, and do you find that having the photo of the label triggers the memory of the taste?
No, I mean, it's more of a reference point than anything else. But, you know, in reference to the email that was sent, you know, that's a perfect way to go about it. You know, if you know what you're into at that period of time, you know, just walk into a store, say, this is what I'm into. This is how much I want to spend. Tell me about what you have. I don't want to drink what I already drank, but show me something new.
Let's quickly go to George in Arlington. George, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. My problem with labels is not so much what's on the front or the colors or the pictures, but what's on the little tiny print on the back, and that's vegan. I've been looking for vegan wines for a while, and even the guys who claim to be specialists, often when you go into a wine store, don't know where the vegan wine is. You have to go look to organic wines or kosher wines that way. And I was recently in Trader Joe's looking at the cheap wines, and just pulled up a Spanish wine, looked at the back, and in tiny print, it was vegan. And when I looked through my list of four pages of vegan products, Trader Joe's didn't even know they owned it. So I think with the way things are trending these days, I know vegans are a very small part of the country, but animal blood, animal products that are used to as signing agents for wines obviously put vegans off. And it would be good if the labels and the people who could describe the wines knew where to find them.
David?
Well, I think you're going to see a lot more of this kind of thing developing in the marketplace, fortunately for you. There is a push to try to get more nutritionals put onto the back of wine labels in the U.S. I don't know if we'll ever see a day where there's a full nutritional outlay, but there's definitely a contingent out there that's aware of people that are not only interested in organics, but also in vegan products. And certainly on some of the spirits we work on, there's definitely a large push towards gluten-free products as well.
Sebastian, David mentioned earlier the question of millennials and whether they are approaching wine in a different way from others. In the time that you've had the Red Hand, have you seen a change at all? Have you seen trends emerging in demand from younger customers?
Yeah, for sure. The fun thing about one of the fun things about the restaurant is the fact that it's super eclectic. And as he was saying, the younger group is certainly open to new ideas. So I get to push a lot of like really interesting weird stuff on the younger group, and it's a
such
lot
such as what
like the orange wines, for example. The only thing about the eclectic wines is that they often come in at a higher price point. But I've been able to kind of like really 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 search and curate this really fun little list where I've been able to kind of find unique kind of interesting things, and I think that the younger group is very very ambitious and really kind of like into the idea of finding stuff that their mom and dad didn't drink. There's not a lot of Bordeaux on my list. There's one bottle of Burgundy,
but there are wines from Slovenia and Georgia.
Oh yeah. And that's what I sell the most. And the young contingent certainly is into it.
You sell those Eastern European wines more than the French wines.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. They're hustling.
And is it because it's a novelty that people are going for that?
I think also a lot of it has to do with the fact that my staff is really excited about it. You know, it's an interesting kind of approach to a wine program. So my staff's really excited about it. I'm excited about it. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that we kind of push it. But I think everybody wants to try new stuff. You know, I think that everybody's just been told to drink Pinot Noir and Cabernet and Syrah for the last 50 years. And the rest of the world's been making all these other things for a long period of time.
Sebastian Zutant is co-owner and sommelier of the Red Hen restaurant in Washington in the Bloomingdale section. I should go check it out. David Schumann is the author of 99 Bottles of Wine, The Making of the Contemporary Wine Label. He's also the owner and creative director of CF Napa Brand Design. Thanks very much for joining us. I'm Mark Fisher of the Washington Post, sitting in for Kojo. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Chris.